Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's call on Buddhas and Butterflies. We are heading into this week's work with Astrological Houses 1 and 2 with a theme of transforming worry into clarity. Who doesn't love clarity? My menopause brain has made that even more of a goal than ever before. So I'm here for all the clarity. And I'm wondering if you have anything else that you want to mention. And just I'm going to say this on the recording. Sometimes I don't say it enough on the recording. You're more than welcome to always send me messages ahead of time if there's anything that you'd like addressed for the calls. And for people that are live, I always invite them to let me know what's going on, what's up, what their intentions are for the session. So feel free to let me know that ahead of time if you're not able to join the call. And then you can access the recording, of course, at your leisure. All right, my loves, we're going to head into today's session by our usual means of breathing. But first, let's get comfy and cozy, finding a place where you can either sit or lay and be undisturbed for your session. Connecting to that breath. Every inhale, an opportunity to call in. To receive. To drink in life. Every exhale, an opportunity to release. To let go, to make space, and every breath an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. And if any part of that is pleasant, potentially just simply neutral, taking time to savor that, to drink that in. Let's let yourself really steepen that to really come alive in it. Then I'm going to invite you on purpose to do that again. This time, locating something that's either external or internal, and taking time to eyes open or closed. Notice, if you could, the things that feel really pleasant and neutral or beautiful, easeful, things that bring you joy, things that bring you delight, things that bring you maybe even almost like a sense of like wonder or awe. Now I've got this plant right in front of me, and it's just like this like wild explosion. I think it's like a Chinese money plant is what it might be referred to as. I'm not very good with plant names. And it's just like bloomed in every which direction. And I'm like, how does nature even do that? So it's so like wild to me. And then I'm gonna invite you to really let yourself just steep that energy, savoring it. Pausing on purpose to notice these things begins to reprogram our brain. To take it out of survival mode, to take it out of the usual, let's just look and see if we can locate the problem mode. I'm purposely locating the delights, the joys, the beauty. I'm not sure if you're hearing it on camera, but just know that my doggo is crunching on some kibbles. So you may hear that in the nearby background. And that actually brings me some delight too. So I'm gonna savor that to hear her munching and crunching. Then, as you continue to appreciate the qualities, locating them, savoring them, I'm gonna invite you to also notice your body's response to that. Noticing your body's responses, because there's likely a bunch of things going on in the body that feel pleasant, easeful in relationship to the item that you have your attention with. So that wildness I begin to feel on the left side of my heart, and there's this sense of like call to adventure, to explore the unknown, to explore things that I haven't even dreamed of yet. Things that I may not have even thought were possible in my preconceived limitations and my oh so humanness. Excuse me. And whatever that is for you, taking time to note that and to savor that too. To savor that too. And as we link mind to body, we begin to come into union. We begin to connect things that may have seemed like they were drifting before. And we begin to create embodiments. We begin to anchor into our body these things that are spiritual, these things that are energetic, in ways that we actually can ground into embodied change and embodied appreciation, and to continuously update our nervous system and giving it another story beyond threats, beyond attack, beyond all the places where it's been. And knowing that even as you take in the things that are bringing you joy and delight, it's actually creating the fuel that you need to process the potential fear or the other schmutz, that's my fancy word, in the system. So as we slow things down here, know that that's almost like a bit of a theme for today. When we work with worry, when we work with the essence of what worry brings, often is a layer of confusion because we're not working with what is. We're projecting ahead to what we think is might be happening based on the past or based on other stories that we've heard about that could be happening that have been rooted as well in history. So as you continue to drink in spaciousness in this way that we began, it also sets the stage for us to work effectively with the emotion of worry, because confusion literally is asking for space and for time. And this is how things begin to become clear. This is where clarity arises. Clarity has never once really came by speeding up, by hurrying up, by going faster, by creating limitations. So let that be the energy of today for our work today. We're going to slow things way down. If there's any parts of you that are uncomfortable with slowing things down, we're also going to be working with those energies too, because we're often taught a very different story in our world. Capitalism, patriarchal energies, not necessarily patriarchy takes a lot of crap, quite frankly. And, sometimes legitimately so, and sometimes maybe it's an easy dumping ground. So I'm going to say it's actually more so the drive for capitalism that creates this hustle culture, that creates this if you're not doing something, then it's wrong. Or if there's any energy behind, we need to move our butts, otherwise we're going to die. Any type of attack, threat to survival energy, it's going to create and amplify worry, anxiety, fear. And even just the mention of slowing things down, because this is where we've been taught to not do that, may stir things up, as I've mentioned. I'm going to suggest that's all been a learned response. That's all been something that you have perceived. It's all been something that you have, along the way, become conditioned to think and to participate in without mindfully locating your own rhythm. And you, if you've been with me in previous programs, you've heard me speak to locating your own rhythm. And we're often taught our own rhythm based on events in early childhood, based on infancy, potentially even in the womb. And right now we're actually going back into that womb space, and we're going into the aorta of your mother's womb. Well, not quite in the womb, but adjacent to the womb. And the rhythm of that blood flow, the rhythm of the physiological movement of blood within your mother's system began to set the stage to your own rhythm, to your own pattern. The womb is not a quiet place. People often mistake that babies need quiet because they are just hearing for the first time, and our ears develop in the womb. And we begin to detect sound, and we begin to detect vibration before we detected sound. And amongst that, we begin to get a sense that our mother's way of being in the world is how we should begin to pattern or shape our own rhythm, our own vibration. And as I say these exact words, my own mothering is coming to attention as my dog is scratching at the door, needing out. She's a senior dog. She sometimes has unpredictable rhythms in this moment. So I'm going to embody this teaching right here, right now, that I'm offering into the space by taking a moment to actually let her out, because that's what she needs. That's her rhythm. So I will take 60 seconds and I will be right back with you. And in that moment, I'm going to invite you to breathe and see what it is to connect within your own body, your own rhythm. See if you can feel your blood flowing through your heart, through your body, and see the rhythm that is here, and just see if this is yours or somebody else's. 1 second, well, maybe 60. Thanks for your patience, everyone. As I settle back in, and we work with the rhythm, the vibration that came through your womb space, that pattern, the rhythm, the vibration of your own heart, we're looking at the, I'm going to say, turbulence or agitation within the blood vessels that are creating almost like a rush, almost like an anxiety. However, it's not being perceived as that. It's being perceived as something that feels good in the system because of that like rush. It's almost like this excitement. Not quite like an adrenaline rush, but not that either. So it's almost that. It's like what comes before the adrenaline rush. There's like that alertness within the system. And within this, there's a sense of vigilance. Some of you may relate to it as hypervigilance, as having to be on guard. And this is again coming in through your mom, who learned it from her mom, who learned it from, you get it. We're going back 7 generations of mothers. Womb space upon womb space upon womb space, where we learned the stress, where we learned vigilance, potentially hypervigilance, where we learned we have to be on guard. And this is linking into your first house. This is linking into the beginnings of where your personality and your physical body came together through fire. The first house is a house of fire, and your heart is your center for your fire. And the first house is about assertive energy. It's about energetic energy. It's about offering at an instinctual level your capacity to respond and to react. So it makes sense that we're here within the heart space around this all. And we're connecting to your primal animal nature to begin to return back to the natural rhythm of you that was there before you learned. Through your mother's mother, 7 generations back. As we hit restore on the natural instinct of your primal rhythm, the one that knew how to work within nature to detect what needed to be detected, but also knew how to shut off and when to rest and restore, because that too is primal. For that whole thing, we're running a Sidri for your heart, for the circulation of your blood. Beginning with C, and this is almost like a little bit of a, you might think of it as a sub-session, as we bring in circulation of blood through to the very blood and through to the very heart itself. Then nerve circulation through communication, carrying that energetic imprinting of remembrance of your primal rhythm. Lymphatic drainage circulation, cleaning out any toxins, gunk, waste, any historical evidence that says you're not supposed to do it the way that you already know how to do it. It's been innate and natural within you. Think of this as restoring almost like natural consciousness within the system for the body talkers in the crowd. Working with chi, the flow of vitality, consciousness, and awareness. Right down into all the little guys, electrons, protons, solitons, neutrons. Working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor. Endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids that lower inflammation, lower anxiety, lower depression, help the system to heal at all levels. In particular, our nervous system and our immune system. Also working with the balance of yin, the feminine essence of nourishment, and yang, the masculine essence of protection, as well as hydration, helping the cells to take in water and joy, releasing the impurities that no longer need to be here. Followed by D for defrag, much like a computer defrag or a spring clean, taking out the clutter of all that no longer needs to be here and what remains can be readily reorganized and utilized for healing. Then all the R's, reevaluation, recontextualization, reprioritization, getting out of rock and hard place type of thinking, opening up to possibilities where it may have seemed like there was none before. Integration, introspection, shift the underlying consciousness. We may think of this as the release, the surrender, the letting go. Okay, cool. Now it's linking into the second house, almost as if like that's been satisfied. Okay, so the second house is that of earthiness. As we do this, it's actually linking into the quality of your relationships. Just finding the words here, bear with me. Okay, it's finding the balance between passion and conservativeness in a way that creates harmony and order for you. And in a way, as this earthiness in the second house, it's about manifesting your material needs through potentially partnership or not necessarily through partnership, but in our context of our session, it's working within that. But also like relationships. And that's because of the element of Venus that rules here. So bringing in healthy planetary connections to support materialism and manifesting through healthy connections within partnerships and relationships. Again, in a measured balance. So the balance for that harmoniousness, is that a word, is coming in through our passion and through our conservative nature. In a way that actually lets you to build or accumulate, a way that lets you to begin to create like a stable energy here. And the earth, she's often, I want to say kept well through tending to our bodies. So the second house, if we were to look at it for more a classical second house, would be more about the personal realm. And this is like, what are the thoughts that you're feeding yourself? What is the food that you're feeding yourself? What is the nourishment that you're feeding yourself? And then can that be measured between passion and conservative? And it's rooting that into our personal self to then in turn create those healthy partnerships and relationships that will also set up and amplify that balance. And we'll see that a little bit more in like the house of, what's the number? I guess 6. And even more so in house number 10. But this is the seedling. This is the seed that gets planted. It's at the personal level. And somewhere in here, you were told that you were not, well, I have two different ways of kind of explaining it. Either you were too demanding, for you took too many resources, or that you should be able to get by with less. And either which way, it created a poverty consciousness. A lack consciousness. And I see it hooked into primarily the limbic, the emotional brain, heavily weighted in the amygdala complex, all the way through to the various different components of the thalamus, all the way down, which is like the sun of the solar system of our brain, the amygdala complex all back up, is where we make decisions based on fear, anger, rage, whether to overreact or respond to things, as well as down to the hypothalamus, which carries our set point, which carries our like foundational point, where we often begin to figure out like our heart rate, our breath rate, our metabolism, and the emotionality in the amygdala complex is informing the thalamus around how it is it's supposed to be orchestrating all of the emotional brain components and their activities. And that's informing the hypothalamus to basically not expect any more than what it's already been getting. In fact, settle for even less. So that's almost like its mantra of all these three components in the brain. Settle for less, settle for less, settle for less. And we're going to take a peek at that. Starting with cellular repair, restoring these cells back to their fullest potential of health. Almost like this is created, I'm going to be dramatic for a moment, and say like a brain injury, brain damage, a sense of depletion within the neuronal activity, and a sense of depletion within the spaces between the cells, the synaptic gap, the synaptic cleft, where the messaging, where those neurotransmitters are meant to communicate from one to the other. And there's a sense here of agitation, not having space, and creating layer after layer after layer of confusion around how are things supposed to change? How are things supposed to get any better? And that agitation or that turbulence, if we will, that we found earlier in the blood is being mimicked here in the nerve synaptic connection. So I know that we're working primarily within the first two houses. However, it's working with the eighth house for regeneration through means of letting this old story die away and creating a rebirth here. That doesn't happen because I've said some words. That happens by the means of the connectedness that you have to this information and the depth that you can feel it and the depth that you can embody that. Let me be really clear on that. And what seems to also be cluttering up, I'm going to say the works here, is a sense of freeze, numb, disassociated. Got it. It's the emotion of shame. And this is not, there's two types of shame. I think I spoke about this, but it was a long time ago, months ago now, where there's red shame and there's white shame. The red shame is the stuff that we can feel, that we are aware of, that we can become, it becomes useful information for us to steward the health of our relationships. Then there's the white shame which is frozen, which says, don't feel me. And it's the white shame that continues to fly underneath the radar. Not all red shame has white shame underneath, but almost always does white shame carry red shame over top of it. And around this all, there's also a very, I'm going to say, distinct form of worry and fear or anxiety, but at an extreme level, creating even almost a sense of paranoia. Okay. And within that, to sort of counteract that, a sense of potentially at times either grandiosity or fantastical, not quite delusion, but fantastical thinking. Basically, energy that's ungrounded, if I could sum it up in a word. So we're linking that through to the earth. And as we release the layers of shame here, there may be a little bit of amplification around paranoia, grandiosity, not quite delusion, but fantastical thinking. And we're bringing in the planetary energy of the sun. Nope. First, we're going to bring in the energy of the moon. There we go. And then the sun. So we're bringing in moonlights. It won't be quite as much of a shock to the white shame. It's more like of a gentle, cool light that can begin to meet the frozen, stuck shame around the soul. And then we're going to bring in the energy of the sun. And then starlight. Even though starlight might be considered not to be as warm as the sun, there is a like a soul level of warmth here that starlight is working with. And as we bring in the energy of the eighth house, we're also bringing with it the planetary energy of Mars, which creates drive. Which creates this, again, return to our primal animal nature. As it does so, it's releasing, interestingly enough, that which should not be spoken about, which is connected to that white shame. It's releasing that which is unspeakable. And we're releasing that through the jaws, through the teeth and the gums, down into the hyoid bone, that floating bone in the upper throat region, and all the way into the throat cartilage. Okay, it's also hooked into the back of the back of the neck, which carries our autonomy structure. The structure that says, I have a choice, and things get to be on my terms now. And I see this as orienting you to reclaiming your voice, even if it makes other people uncomfortable. Reclaiming your expression that's in alignment with you, and using those things to begin to embody the return to your primal natural rhythm, far beyond that which you learned or that which you were taught. And letting yourself possess your own self, your own expression, your own voice. Perhaps that's the biggest rebellion there is. Excuse me. Blinking into the eyes and finding a balance point. The left eye is that which receives, the right eye, which is that which provides outward gaze. You feel free to check it out in a mirror. It's kind of cool, actually. If you notice, there's a very energetic difference. So the left eye draws in and the right eye draws out. However, right now, the left eye has a protective, almost like that vigilant gaze to it that's creating a sense of you better look out, you better watch out. And as we begin to soften that by means of fancy name Bebo's technique in body talk, it begins to release the holdings around the optic nerve as well as the various different eye muscles and their nerves that innervate them, as well as the tendons and the ligaments of those particular teeny tiny eye muscles. And then I hear the ear like crackle. And the ear actually has a very small muscle that wraps around the tympanic membrane and can create like an ache at times. Or if you ever get like that feeling of my ear is just kind of plugged, it might be because that muscle is tight. And for both the eye and the ear and their various muscles and their holdings through them, we're releasing the expectation based on history of neglect, the anticipation of neglect, and the anticipation of abandonment. As we do that, as we release that through the eyes, we are balancing the energy between the two eyes so that there is a harmonious blend between inward and outward energy. And we're linking that all through to the 12th house. House of releasing, surrendering, allowing. House of making space within your very senses themselves. Well, in this case, it's the house of making space. But as we link it with the eyes and the ears, creating sensory spaciousness. Taking off the pressure. Taking out the demand. And taking out any perceived attack. As I say that all, I see the base chakra begin to, like a corkscrew, if we were looking down at it, it's rotating clockwise. And it begins to just simply begin to move in a new direction in a way that creates upward momentum, in a way that speaks to energy that builds up the system, not depletes it, in a way that expects or creates anticipation that things may actually be generative, nourishing. And with that, I see the wood element coming in. As it links into the wood element, think of the wood element as carrying our internal spring energy, things coming back to life, defrosting after all that shame, creating momentum to support our system in not just blossoming and coming alive, but in allowing ourselves to reach a fuller, deeper, richer expression than we may have ever located before. I'm gardening this year, and I'm amazed at what's like coming to life in the realm of the flowers that I planted. And it's like, I didn't even know it would look like that. I got some surprise plants from a dear friend of mine who's a gardener extraordinaire. And it's just like, I didn't even expect that it would bloom like that. Look at that. That's so gorgeous. So kind of in that way, what if you got to be surprised by the beauty that comes your way versus on guard for or bracing for what has historically been the case? And to support that, you know that practice that we did at the beginning where you found something that was pleasant, useful, beautiful to look at, and you took time to contemplate it? Be with it, feel it, drink it in, feel it in the body. This is your home care, home play, homework to do this. You're welcome to do it as much or as little as you like. I like to do it usually a few times a day for myself, sometimes even more. I'll play with it. I find it's a really good, rich orienting practice as well. So whenever I find myself in a new environment, I just simply locate what feels good for me to be around, and it creates an ease. So in that same vein, we get to anticipate that which brings beauty. We get to train our brain to anticipate the goodness that's coming our way. And we release the cycles that our mothers were frozen to, that our grandmothers were bound by, that our lineage carried for far too long. And we link that all to the hearts. We link that all to the hearts. And I invite you to allow yourself to just check out what it is to breathe into that heart space by means of a slow, deep breath. Not necessarily that you're exaggerating it, but because there's actually space in here that you may not have located before. And you may locate that more readily by going lightly and slowly to find depth rather than a big, powerful exertion. So without force, light and slow, breath by breath, the poet in me wants to say we begin to cultivate and tend to the inner garden, the inner ecosystem. And we link this all the way through to the lungs, which become like the wings of the hearts. The lungs are connected to that first house. They bring in new life. They bring in new beginnings. They bring in new possibilities. They bring in things that may not have been thought of or available before. I'm going to tap this out here. So invitation to breathe, to receive, however feels right for you. As I feel my heart, I feel just deeply thankful for the grace that was offered by you all earlier when I put my little doggo out. Thank you for that. Big yawn for me too. Definitely drinking that one in too. And the next layer isn't arriving yet, and I imagine that's because we're going to create that space and that time for this part to land. So I'm going to invite you to just simply stay with your breaths, light, slow, in a way that provides a level of depth that might be more accessible than will or force could provide. Light and slow, but deep. And while you breathe, just noticing where that breath can go in your body, how much of your body can breathe or be breathed. Okay, the next layer is here. Not to be rushed. Sometimes I set myself up for these things to happen, and there's a moment where I go, oh my gosh, what's happening next? It's like, oh right, I set myself up for that at the beginning, space and time. As I take a moment to be with my own, like, is the next part going to show up? Which happens in bodhicitta, quite frankly. There's times where there's a wait or a linger or a pause. And it's usually because the next layer is just mindfully unearthing itself. It's on the right-hand side in the front body, but just to the right of the midline, and it's in the abdomen. So it's not quite anatomical, but that's the spatial place of it. If we could imagine a vertical line through that area, like just to the right side of the through the abdomen of the midline, just to the right of the midline, pardon me, on the abdomen, there is an energy here of guidance, and it's not like the receiving of guidance. It's actually the guidance on action to take. And it's releasing its own frozen, numb, shame pattern here as well. In a way that's created excessive worry. So shame's at the root of it, but worry is the symptom. It's like, how do I move forward? How do I get unstuck? And the worry of, in particular, what will people think if I do it in ways that are in alignment with me and perhaps unconventional to them? Worry around what is it to honor my own guidance that comes from within myself? Worry about the consequences within your relationships, your business, your all the facets of life, your connections across the board. And it's actually releasing a layer of having to fix or change or manage how it is you are connecting in this world. And within that, releasing the underlying expectation of shame around how it is you choose to connect with others, how it is you choose to relate to others, how it is you choose to stand within your own inner being while you're also connected to others. And here we're also releasing the expectation of betrayal. That others in connection will stab you in the back, stab you in the front, will betray you. And as I sit with that, we need to do a few things. One, switching, which helps to cope or deal with stress. Two, cellular repair, restoring the cells here back to their fullest potential of health. And then three, working with the consciousness of all that I've expressed, that all is carried here within your systems. And release, pardon me, releasing and relinquishing it, which is the two words that were trying to come out at once there, through to the heart space, along with all five senses, to create a sense of individuation, a sense of locating yourself and being able to stand within all of that, being able to stand within your body again. Without necessarily the typical concern of, but if I do that, won't people have whatever response they're going to have? So doing this in a way that prioritizes you. And sometimes we forget to do that when we've lost our childhood youthfulness in favor of our adult ways. So here we're going to bring in the essence of the child in a productive, healthy way. And we're going to tap this all out here. Invitation to breathe. Invitation to receive. And while we tap it out, I'm going to, if you're able to do it out loud or even in imagination is fine, but if you can, if you're in a space to do it out loud, please make a little sound. V-U. V-U. And as you sound, know that we're linking that into the entire nervous system to create a parasympathetic or a relaxation response. Giving that a round of breath. And as we do that, I see the consciousness of decay begin to leave that right side of the body to allow for new action to take form on the other side of where that frozen shame was bound. And as we do so, releasing a fear of having to compete with the feminine. So this is on the masculine side of the body. And it's not so much that your masculine is afraid of competition with women, but it's like your own feminine nature is storing it over here because it's like too much to have on its own side of its body. So it's like leaking onto this side. Fearing the competition with other women. And fearing that it has to be a competition. And that's the only way to necessarily grow, understand, learn around what it is to be a woman in relationship to other women. To the point where there may be some layers of confusion that then led to, I'm going to use a big word here, just hold the phone for a second. I'm going to use some other words to explain in a minute. That's going to create potentially even a sense of narcissism. Oh, I know, it's a big word. And here's the thing, every human being alive, whether or not you are considered to be like an actual narcissist, which is like, I think, one of the more overused words in pop psychology these days, has their own narcissism to a degree. We all have a layer of that within a healthy ego structure. You need a little bit of it. And most of us haven't learned how to have that in a healthy way. Most of us have learned we need to achieve our needs by means of either overgiving or taking something, which is narcissistic in nature, just in nature. Doesn't mean that you are then a narcissist or it's the identity of narcissism. But we all have a certain amount of healthy narcissistic structures within us, and unhealthy layers can pop up there. And it's connected to this idea of competition and having to win versus being able to collaborate and to find ease here, moving beyond. And we're honestly taught to compete. We're honestly taught to be jealous. We're honestly taught to, in particular, try to outperform in the arena of beauty compared to other women. And if we can't find it through beauty, then we'll locate it elsewhere. maybe relocate it through like our capacity to be generous, or capacity to be thoughtful or intellectual. As we do this, we're actually going to bring in a counterbalance. As we bring in the counterbalance, it's that of the consciousness of charming and enchanting. So, what is it within your own being to find the energy to charm in a way that isn't narcissistic, that doesn't pander, that doesn't need to get something out of the interaction, and to just simply find enchantment in relationship, because you get to find enchantment within your own self. I may have already said this quote, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but there's something along the lines of the soul requires daily re-enchantment through wonder, through awe. And that again speaks to the resourcing practice that we talked about earlier, locating the things that bring us wonder, the things that bring us beauty, the things that bring us awe, begins to undo the, as well, covers a lot of ground, that little exercise, huh? The way that we may be interacting around receiving versus thinking that we have to go out and get it and take it versus magnetize it and draw it towards us. As we do this, we soften our own layers of narcissism. And, oh, another hard truth here. If we have found ourselves in relationship to a narcissist, especially if it's been repeated, that is likely a very big sign. It is a call to action that we locate that which is within ourselves. And trust, I am not devoid of this. I am right in the trenches here with you, within all of this. So if there's any sense of, anything other than humanness on this side as I relay this information, know that it is my work too. It's all of our works. And that narcissism that we so seemingly readily locate out there seems to be more profoundly located within those of us that are more on the sensitive, empathic, or withdrawn even side, introverted side. And that creates its own form, not through overt narcissism, but maybe a covert narcissism. And we may be overly generous or overly caring in ways to manipulate the situation to our benefit at times. Or it might just simply be done to try to avoid any more problems. So it may not even be coming from a conscious or even subconscious desire to manipulate for one's own gain. But if it can be embraced as a means of trying to work our way through our own pain and our own suffering. And it's all related to, I feel like I need like 17 hours to unpack these statements, so bear with me, I'm just touching the edges of this all. Hi, babe. Big topic. My brain's trying to say a lot about it all at once. So maybe I'll sum it up as we have the opportunity to study narcissism in our outer environment, and that in turn becomes our opportunity to remember what it is to receive our own needs with ease. To receive our own needs with ease. We're going to tap this out here. Invitation to breathe and to receive, however feels right for you. And as I'm tapping it out, the last thing I'll mention about this topic, because it's coming up to mention it too, is that if you were raised by a narcissist, to some degree we may have internalized that to be a narcissist to within, like within our own selves. Or we may have learned to use similar tactics on an unconscious level to get our own needs met in our environments. Out of the idea that that's the only way change can actually happen that keeps you safe, protected, healthy, strong, whatever the word is there for you. We use it as a justification at times in its own way. And then we're unhooking a layer of almost like the emotional response to that all. We're unhooking that off of the very foundation of your first house, of where you began to learn how to, well, I keep saying this in these ways, but it lands here again, to meet your own needs, to get your needs met. To get the attention, the affection, the appreciation that you deserved or desired. That was necessary for your own healthy ego structure. As we do that, releasing the burden of having to perpetuate those cycles off of the back of the shoulders and the back of the neck and throughout the entire head. Releasing one more layer of worry / shame through those areas as well, and linking it through to the skull for clarity. For as the skull embodies clarity, as well as through to the mouth for nourishment. So clarity that nourishes, and nourishment that feeds clarity. As we link the mouth right back to the skull, it creates an upward spiral. Clarity granting nourishment, the capacity to take in more nourishment leading to more clarity. And it creates this upward spiral, which we're going to run for the next 3 weeks, which is to the very end of our first two houses. So I invite you to again breathe, receive, however feels right for you. Giving that a slow, deep breath. I've got a song, it's about 3 minutes, called Darling by Beautiful Chorus. I'll pop in the link for it here too. I invite you to rest in that all, potentially finding that resource that you found earlier or locating a different one, if desired.
Darling, darling, you're beautiful. Gotta keep your head up. Never let anything bring you down. Sunshine will always come around. Stay strong, move on. You have such a beautiful soul. Let your energy radiate. Darling, darling, you're beautiful. Gotta keep your head up. Never let anything bring you down. The sunshine will always come around. Stay strong, move on. You have such a beautiful soul. Let your energy radiate. Your head up. Darling, darling, time, but days will get much better. Darling, darling, you can make it through the stormy weather. Darling, darling, please don't ever give up. Darling, darling, you gotta keep your head up.
Thank you for the opportunity to gather here today. And thank you for being here exactly as you are. All right, if anyone needs any extra support afterwards, please do let me know. You're welcome to stick around. And if you want any support after listening to the recording, please reach out. I'm going to say goodbye for today. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Blessings on your beginning to July. Bye for now, loves.